Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to The Art Detective with me, Dr. Yanina Ramirez. I'm an Oxford art historian, a broadcaster and lecturer, and I'm your chief investigator of images. I'm coming to you today from the Royal Society of the Arts, rather fittingly for Art Detective. So it's quite cavernous, quite noisy, but I'm here sipping a lemonade with Shona Data.
Hello.
I'm so pleased you're doing this. You fascinate me because not only have you studied medieval Indian art,
yes,
but you branch out, don't you? You
straddle
wear different
a few
hats.
Centuries.
You do, yeah. Tell me a bit about what you do.
Well, my PhD was in medieval South Indian temple architecture, so the great temple cities of South India, urban design. But latterly, I became interested in the 20th and 21st century because, of course, these were quite dramatic times in the Indian subcontinent. And really, it's the connection between history and modernity that is of enduring interest to me. And in that sense, it's quite useful to wear hats that are both medieval and modern.
Mm. And you're a curator? And
apparently, yeah.
And a broadcaster.
Yes.
I first encountered you through your fantastic series that you did for BBC4. It was three programmes, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Treasures of the Indus. It was an art historical travelogue that took the viewer from the ancient Buddhist heartlands of northern Pakistan through Mughal India and down to the deep south of peninsular India across three episodes, covering about 4,500 years of human history in 3 hours, as you do on telly.
As telly does, yeah. No, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I really, really enjoyed it. So I got in touch and I said, let's do an art detective. And you suggested the most fabulous artwork for us to discuss today. So tell the listeners what we're looking at.
We're looking at Tipu's tiger,
yes,
which is one of the most famous Indian objects in the V&A. And I actually first saw it on Blue Peter.
Did you?
Which shows my age. I think it was about 1982 or something, and it appeared on Blue Peter.
It's an absolutely fascinating object, and I know that some listeners will know it because it is quite iconic, isn't it? It's this enormous piece of wooden,
it's almost life-size, wooden automaton, it's called, which is a mechanical toy, or in many ways, it's a robot.
Yeah.
And in the way that robots often elicit powerful emotive reactions in people, this also does.
Yeah.
And although it's a really iconic object, it's one of the most famous objects, as I've said, in the V&A's India collections and in the V&A itself, there's a lot we don't know about it. So it's incredibly mysterious. And so I thought it was a kind of fitting subject for this podcast, for The Art Detective.
Well, we like to push the boundaries a bit, so we're not looking at a painting
or
anything traditional.
No.
This is, yeah, as you say, almost life-size. You've got a man lying on
prostrate,
the ground. Prostrate.
On his back.
And there is a huge tiger
mauling
him
at his neck. So, And the man is, I mean, he hasn't got a hope in hell, really. he's got right at the jugular by this mauling tiger. Now, in itself, a tiger mauling a man in the context of Indian art is not unusual. Right. Because tigers, of course, are native to India. And you see them, tigers and men in opposition, in battle, as representations of kind of male prowess. You see these throughout Indian art. Mm. So that in itself is not unusual. What's unusual about this is that our man here is in European garb.
Right.
And this particular magnificent object, which is, you know, there's only one of its kind, belonged to the infamous Tipu Sultan of Mysore.
Right. And infamous because?
Well, I mean, I think we've all heard of Tipu Sultan. We might not now know quite why we've heard of him. But he, in the 18th century, he was a real kind of hero of the resistance against the British. Mm. And for that reason, he was hated by the British. You know, he stood up to the East India Company. And for about five decades, him and his dad fought off the East India Company and prevented them from taking control of southern India. Mm-hmm. So Mysore is near the town, the modern town of Bangalore, mm-hmm. today, just to situate it for you. And you know, he was a powerful, wealthy, despotic in many ways, Muslim sultan of India. But I think history's been unkind to him. Because he became a figment for British propaganda. And the other reason why I chose him is, you know, it's 2017. It's the 70th anniversary this year of Indian independence and partition. And so Britain's and India's sort of embroiled history that's sort of folded into each other, these two countries. You know, this is a good moment to re-examine this.
Yeah, and that's why I think this, the choice of this object is just perfect. It encapsulates that resistance, doesn't it? So you've got, the fact it's an automaton, what happens is when you turn a handle, is that right?
Yep, you turn a handle.
And then the man's arm goes up.
The man's arm goes up as he is being mauled to death.
Yeah.
And through a series of half tones, it mimics the sort of wailing, agonized, you know, cries of a dying man.
We'll try and get the video of this thing moving, yeah, on embedded into the podcast, because yeah, it's terrible. The man,
it's uncomfortable
wails
to listen to, as you know, all wailing of dying men should be. It's not sonorous.
And then the tiger roars at
and
the same
tiger
time
roars, yes.
And then of course it's quite magical, because a flap comes down at the side and you've got an organ, a miniature,
yes,
yeah, pipe organ in,
yes,
there.
Inside. Yes, yeah. So it's quite a sophisticated piece of early engineering, and as an early musical instrument. And these automatons were quite popular. They were very popular in contemporary Europe, and you know, wealthy Indian rulers also collected them. So this was very a la mode. It was very much of its time for a man of Tipu Sultan's stature to commission such a piece. But, you know, he didn't commission a musical, you know, a ballerina in a box. He commissioned a tiger, and the tiger was his stamp.
Right.
You know.
The tiger appears all over his things associated with him, his
everything,
palaces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was known as the tiger.
Right.
And so he was master of kind of propagating his own mythology. Mm. And, you know, I mean, he really kind of developed his own brand. You know, this was a modern man, you know.
I think that, yeah, just the idea that the tiger's appearing, I've heard descriptions, it's from the Summer Palace, isn't it?
Yes.
It was in his Summer Palace, and it was everywhere. There was tigers on every single
absolutely
surface.
Absolutely. I mean, he was feared by the British East India Company. Mm. He was absolutely feared. And one of the reasons they hated him was because he allied himself to the French, who were the other great superpowers, let's not forget, at that time. So what's going to piss the British off more than a powerful Muslim ruler of India hobnobbing with the French.
I think that's brilliant. It clearly is a representation of him, I suppose, as Tiger, him yes. representing the Indian resistance, mm. mauling a European
yes.
man.
Yes.
Because we can say that about this character underneath,
we
can't we?
Yeah. yeah, and he actually, although the V&A historically has been quite careful in the way it's described the attire of this man, he's clearly European, he's clearly wearing European garb, yeah. and I think we can safely say that he is a soldier, and he's probably a soldier of the East India Company.
I'm glad you said that, because there is ambiguity yes. over it, isn't there? They're very yeah. delicate. It could be,
it could be
different sorts of dress.
Yes.
I think he looks like a soldier. Yeah.
Just tell it like it is.
yeah, this is war. This is
war.
All-out war.
Yeah.
And, in terms of the way that this thing is painted, is mm. decorated, does it show a blending of styles, or is this very typically Indian?
I think the representation of the tiger is very Indian.
Okay.
The way the stripes are painted, the beautiful woodwork. The South Indian woodwork is extremely famous and well known. And some of the best examples of sophisticated woodwork come from South India. Mm. But that's combined with a literally wooden representation of an East India Company soldier,
mm.
Who clearly here doesn't have a chance. I mean, this tiger has just pounced on him. And, he's a goner.
Yeah.
He's absolutely a goner.
Yeah, he's pinned down and the tiger has got him by the neck. I love the fact that his hat's sort of pressed down to show how submissive he is. This would have been used to entertain the court, is that right?
Yes, I think so. I mean, we don't actually know. We know it was commissioned by Tipu Sultan, but it doesn't come with any kind of inscription, unusually. There's no pedestal. And after Tipu was finally defeated, his palace was looted.
Mm.
And this was taken as kind of like among many other things, as a trophy.
Absolutely. Well, it's a badge of honour in that
Absolutely.
Case. But on the part of the East yeah. Indian Company to sort of say, well, actually, we've defeated you now.
Yes, exactly.
And then the idea that it has got this robotic element. It's sophisticated. It's a real prize to take back, isn't it?
It is, absolutely.
And it still yeah. plays as well. I've seen a little video of someone playing it.
Yes.
And it makes the most amazing sound. You've yeah. got 18... buttons almost?
Yes, keys.
And they are in sort of semitones, but not quite.
Quite,
are they?
Yeah. yeah. I mean, it's quite unusual because it sits between a European meter and an Indian meter.
That's what I wanted to ask you yeah. about. Right, explain yeah. that a bit, because again, I'm not a specialist on these things.
Well, I mean, it just makes it very unique and unusual in that sense. And it shows that the level of experimentation and sophistication of the kind of objects that were being commissioned in the court of Tipu Sultan. And so this was a man of quite refined tastes.
Mm. Oh, you know what we haven't done? We haven't given the dates.
Uh-huh.
Which would be
that
helpful.
That would be helpful, yeah. yes. So it dates to about 1790.
Yeah.
So late 18th century. And it's very much in keeping with the technology is in keeping with automatons of that time, but the iconography is completely exceptional.
Mm.
And that's what makes it really a ravishing object to look at.
Mm.
I mean, it captivates the imagination as much as it did when I was sort of eight, as it did now, much older, many moons later. and I think that's what has been its draw. You know, it's been on display ever since I can remember at the V&A, and it has this incredible pulling power.
Yeah, yeah, and I think the fact that it still works. I mean, they don't have it in motion
sure.
often. It's only when it's out for conservation,
mm.
but it works perfectly.
Yeah,
and again, that's testament to the technology that's gone into it. So, do you think in some ways as well, it's showing off the skills of the court of Tipu in his court?
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is the man who was a show-off. I mean, let's make no bones about it. But, you know, this was a man who could show off.
Mm.
You know, he was incredibly powerful. And, it was his remit and his prerogative to do that. So why shouldn't he? you know.
And at the time that this is dating from then, around 1790, put a bit of context into what's happening across India, because we're talking about the very southern part, almost down to the tip.
Almost down to the tip, yeah, of peninsular India, which had thus far resisted the incursion of the British, the takeover of the East India Company. They originally arrived in Calcutta, in the northeastern part of India. They chose not to rule from Delhi, which was a much older city in the middle of India. And Calcutta really was just a village until the East India Company made it a very successful trading post. And then later, the ambitions of the East India Company were taken over by the imperial ambitions of the British government. But British interests in India were originally all about money and commerce.
Yeah, yeah. And so Tipu and his father resisted.
And the British had skirmishes with many princely rulers in India. And Tipu Sultan has just come down to us as one of the most sort of vehemently feared and the one who offered the greatest resistance. Mm. And so the sort of mythology around him has really endured over 200 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Did he deserve it? Well, I'm not sure that he did. You know, I mean, he on the one hand, you know, he was ridiculed by the British, but he kind of served the ends of British propaganda, because he represented, through the sort of mechanical mujahideen, if you like, he represented this crazed Muslim, uncivilized nutter, really, who meted out terrible punishments on people he captured. You know, but at the same time, he allied himself with, you know, he was a clever ruler.
Yeah, and enchanted by the European world, the European technology and art that you can see represented here. I mean, I'm struck by, in a way, how European the figural elements of this appear. And I do see it very much as a combination of different traditions.
Absolutely, and that's what, I mean, that's what India is, was, and always has been. India is a vast country, and it's a vast genetic pool. And there have been multitudes of invaders who've come, you know, right from the Greeks and Alexander the Great. The British are just, you know, very late in the day in a long line of people who had this enduring fascination with the riches that lay beyond the River Indus. And so Indian art is a kind of melange, if you like, of many different facets. And this represents that. You know, you have this incredible woodworking tradition of South India, the tradition of representing tigers. You have sophisticated technology of the automaton. And it represents company art, the art of the East India Company, who also commissioned a lot of art, you know, which was a kind of confluence of Indian and European.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast. and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
European traditions.
Yeah. And you said in particular it's the tiger, the decorative elements, the design of the tiger that seems to be chiming more with the Indian style. Is that coming through?
It's much more, I mean, there's a stiffness and a literal woodenness to this figure, to this poor man who's beneath this mauling tiger, you know. But the tiger itself is incredibly curved and vigorous, and you know, you get the sense of its might.
And it is very detailed. I mean, there's carved aspects to around the head, and then there's even the little sort of hump on the back to show the realism of the tiger.
And this way of representing the stripes through these kind of leaf patterns, if you like, with this black stripe in the middle. It's not painted in literal vertical stripes, which would have this flattening effect on the sculpture. This is a way to show the curvature of the sculpture and celebrate that.
Is that gold paint around there? So, so there's this, the black centre in the middle, gold around it. There's also foil elements, aren't there? Bits of, I think the belt of the soldier is that silver foil?
I think it would have been silver paint.
So there's a richness to the appearance of
Absolutely.
This piece.
And
it would have been in the Summer Palace, but we don't know in what setting.
I mean, there's lots of conjecture. It could have been in a music room. It could have been in the private quarters. I mean, what was this? Was this something that he used to entertain his courtiers? Was it something that he used to entertain his European visitors, like the French or the Danish, who were also in the region at the time? Or was this the private toy of a kind of crazy man-child?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because in my imagination, if this is being wheeled out to entertain visiting Europeans, it is slightly
Well, the French would have loved it, of course.
Right. But I mean, is it identifiably a British soldier, though? I mean, is that something that...
Well, I think we can safely say that it is.
Right.
Because clearly he's not Indian. You can tell from the tone of his skin. And by the same token, you know, Tipu was known and has been known for the last two centuries as having pitted himself against the British.
Yeah.
And that's how he's remembered there and here.
And this is a repeated image, isn't it? Because it doesn't just appear here. This idea of the tiger attacking a European soldier, he had it repeated on other things?
He did, yes. On prints, on paintings. It appears in embroidery. But as I said, the iconography of the tiger attacking a human being is quite familiar in the Indian context. He's just used it within his own landscape. He's applied his own metaphor to it.
How clever. So he's appropriated that tradition, but he's made it very politically specific to this moment.
And there is a broader Indo-Iranian artistic and stylistic tradition of associating royal power, regal power, with big cats. And traditionally in India, kings associated themselves with lions. Tipu unusually chose the tiger. You know, and as I said before, he worked very hard to develop his brand identity, and he succeeded.
Is it different to his father? Did his father have a different sort of iconography and symbolic tradition?
It is, actually. The tiger iconography comes specifically with Tipu Sultan. Yeah.
And is
not
that
Hyder
as we
Ali,
see
father.
A rise in
yes,
resistance then?
Absolutely.
So it is very much deliberately aimed at this
the British yes.
and defeating their army.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Tipu and his father, Hyder Ali, spent 50 years warding off the British. You know, this is half a century's worth of, you know, blood and battle and defiance.
And am I right in thinking then he was very brutal to the soldiers that he captured?
Yes, there are. I mean, you know, one in particular after the Second Anglo-Mysore War, it was around 1780 to 84, a large number of East India Company troops were captured and incarcerated in the dungeons at Seringapatnam, which is where his capital was. For longer than they were originally supposed to be. And those who eventually escaped wrote some rather florid, extremely colourful accounts of what happened to them,
yes.
including being subjected to, you know, excruciating and humiliating circumcision.
Yeah.
Now, circumcision, you know, in Europe was fairly unusual at that time, and it was only associated with quote-unquote going Turk, which meant converting to Islam. The mythology that's grown up around it was that he sort of forced these people to convert. Now, that's a misnomer.
Yeah.
And I think that that has served the ends of British propaganda. Mm. Because, you know, he allied himself to the French. I mean, he did what he needed to do. Mm. But that doesn't take away from the fact that he was brutal.
Brutal, yeah.
But, you know, history doesn't remember the kind, fluffy, woolly rulers. I mean, name me one.
Well, we're getting through it at the moment, aren't we? Yeah. But no, I think you're there right. You know, the renowned ones, the ones that survive, are the ones that bring about that sort of effective resistance.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as he's managing to resist, other areas are falling.
Yes, and so absolutely.
The fact he's remained a legend and remembered is because he was brutal.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's so interesting that this object was brought back and displayed so proudly. In a way, I'd have felt that the East India Company might have seen this as a humiliating image.
Originally, it wasn't on public display. It first arrived back in the UK in 1800, I believe, and it was housed in the library of the East India Company, and later moved to the V&A, to the India section of the V&A. I suspect they didn't quite know what to do with it.
Yeah.
I suspect that they were dead chuffed they'd got it.
Well, it is. They got into the palace. That's the thing. They've broken in to that stronghold.
And here's the booty.
And here is the booty.
Yeah.
Regardless of the fact that it's deeply insulting to them, it's still a sign of their success.
Sure.
But I can imagine it must have been a slightly problematic piece. But just so enchanting and so technologically advanced, I think.
Mm.
I think now if you encounter it, it's the scale of it that's so surprising. And was, again, not knowing an awful lot about his palace, what remains? What have we got to put it into the setting?
Oh, his palace is as vast and over the top as this object would suggest. Mm. I mean, this is completely in keeping with the image of Tipu Sultan as incredibly wealthy, incredibly flamboyant, and wearing all of that.
Mm.
You know, this was a man of incredible power and incredible riches, which the East India Company wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and he displayed that. And there is still today a palace in Mysore, which you can go and visit, which will give you a very good idea of, you know, what this man represented during his time, during his lifetime.
And tell me about the downfall then. How does it all come to an end?
Well, he was eventually captured and killed in his own fort after a bloody war. And that, you know, that was his downfall. And he died in the place where he fought his hardest battles. Mm. And you know, the mythology lives on from there.
Mm.
And it was after his downfall that the palace and the fort were looted, and, you know, this, among other things, were carried away as war booty.
I think it's such an important artwork to look at for this podcast, because not only does it break our preconceptions of what art can be, in that it is, you know, carved wood, carved painted wood, but also an automaton and a musical instrument. So it's important for all those reasons, but it's so important as a symbol of that moment in history, isn't it? And that place. It's so completely rooted to that place.
It is, but I think it has relevance today as well, because even today, you know, I mean, he really fought the British And yet today, in a kind of rising Hindu right-wing nationalist India that we have today, he's a complicated figure because he was a Muslim. For that reason, many people find it difficult to award him the status of being an anti-colonial hero, which in many ways he was, you know. We can certainly take issue with some of his methods, but then let's make no bones about it. The methods of the East India Company, you know, they make today's corporations look like pussycats.
Oh my goodness, you're so right. I've been watching Taboo.
Of course.
It's all very cutting edge at the moment. But no, I mean, it's brutal and it's war. Yeah. And again, that's what comes through.
At any cost. Mm. Yeah.
And I think the brutality and the almost the unsettling aspect of this, the violence of this piece, again, is what makes it so powerful.
Compelling.
It's so dynamic. It's so violent. And it is this representation of resistance.
And we don't usually think, let's face it, we don't usually think of Indian art as being unsettling or violent. In most senses, in a European museum, especially in somewhere like the hallowed halls of the Victoria and Albert Museum, for your average visitor, Indian art is sensual, colorful, exotic, pleasing, but not troubling. You know, and this disturbs and disrupts all of those preconceptions. And for those reasons alone, I love it.
Oh, I love it too. I love it. I'm so pleased we've been able to talk about it. I'm so sorry, listeners, about background noise, but here in the beating heart of the Royal Society of Arts, everybody is working hard. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. I'm so glad you could come and do this. And you're on Twitter, aren't you?
I am.
Do you want to give your handle?
@Data_Shona.
Excellent. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm Dr. Yanina Ramirez. I do hope that you've enjoyed the podcast. If you want to subscribe, it's historyhit.com/artdetective. Just remains for me to say thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.